What is your reaction to a special counsel being appointed to investigate the Russian influence in the presidential election? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Former FBI Director Robert Mueller is the special counsel who will investigate possible ties between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. We will ask our guest what this means and where we go from here. And we'll also talk about the growing calls, or at least the growing talk, of possible impeachment. What does this mean for the presidency of Donald Trump? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So do you think this was the right move or not? Let me welcome our guest, David Schultz, a professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul, Minnesota, author of 30-some books. His areas of expertise include American politics, media and politics, campaigns and elections, and election law. And he recently wrote about the issue of impeachment on his blog, Schultz's Take. Good morning, and thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we booked you to talk about the various calls for impeachment, but since then, as has happened just about every day now for the past week, another big story broke late yesterday. And the Justice Department appointed former FBI Director Robert Mueller as special counsel to oversee this Russia investigation. What's your reaction to that?
That's actually a very good move on the part of the Trump administration. Mueller served as the FBI director for 12 years under both George Bush and under Barack Obama, exceedingly well-respected, and has been given quite a bit of independence and leeway to be able to do the investigation. So I think this is a very good move in terms of trying to uncover what exactly is going on. And so moving forward, I would say that people should feel reasonably confident, at least right for now, that Mueller is going to be able to undertake an investigation and have it with what appears to be the type of independence that I think both Democrats and Republicans would like to see. So I think this is a very good move, and probably what we need to do now is to see how this proceeds in terms of gathering information.
Yeah. So what is we heard for calls for a special prosecutor? Is that the same as a special counsel?
Effectively, it is. And what we need to do is to take us back in time to put some context into this. Is that back? You know, when there was the need to investigate Richard Nixon because of, at that time, there were the allegations surrounding the break-in at Democratic National Headquarters in Watergate, there was no provision in place to create an independent special prosecutor. Nixon had appointed then Archibald Cox, who had previously served as a Solicitor General, and what people... which basically is the person who argues cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. And some people might recall the famous Saturday Night Massacre where Richard Nixon fired the Archibald Cox, eventually had him fired. And because of that, there was this concern that there's a difficulty. There's a difficulty in our Constitution. If the president is the chief executive and chief law enforcer of the United States, how does the executive department, Justice Department, investigate itself? So Congress created a special prosecutor, which would be set up and appointed by a district court judge in Washington, who would only be able to be dismissed for cause by the president. And so we had people such as Leon Jaworski and other special prosecutors set up to do investigations, which meant they were not appointed by the president but by somebody outside. That special prosecutor law expired in the 1990s after Kenneth Starr's investigation of Bill Clinton into Whitewater and to other issues. And so we have nothing really set up in place to create an independent special prosecutor in terms of a law. And so what we have with Robert Mueller being put in place is the Justice Department saying, we're going to appoint this person, grant this person freedom, and trust us to give this person the kind of freedom that he needs to be able to do the investigations. But it's not like it was, again, in the the real Watergate, that I would say Iran-Contra, Bill Clinton, you know, Whitewater era, where there was an actual law set up to designate and create an independently appointed special prosecutor.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like most people are praising the choice of Robert Mueller to be this special counsel. Here, for example, is Congressman Jason Chaffetz, who heads the House Oversight Committee. Here's what he had to say.
He's as good as it gets. I mean, his credentials are impeccable. He served in the Bush administration, the Obama administration. No, he is unassailable in terms of his credentials, his background, and I think your point is well taken. He's in the latter part of his career. He has nothing to prove. He's been silent politically. It doesn't get any better than Robert Mueller if you're going to do it. I also agree that I don't think they should have actually appointed somebody.
So he praises Mueller as the choice, but I think he doesn't think this special investigation is necessary because I guess he's leading one too.
Well, this is where we probably would disagree, and a lot of people would disagree, is the fact that Congress certainly has the ability to be able to do investigations. But again, taking us back to sort of a Watergate analogy, if we can draw this, and even back to Whitewater, at the same time that there was congressional investigations, there was also a Justice Department investigations through a special prosecutor. So there's no reason why you can't actually have them sort of pursuing simultaneously, and then maybe in some situations coordinating on some issues. But there at this point, there's no reason to think that that the two will get in the way of one another, and no reason based upon past precedent to think that having these sort of simultaneous investigations going on will cause any kind of problems or will lead to any kind of problems. In fact, they might be able to use divisions of labor to gather information that one investigation might not be able to get as opposed to the other.
Yeah. Another reason why Chaffetz apparently didn't think a special counsel was needed is he said that he has not seen any evidence to date that there was any collusion or cooperation between the Trump campaign officials and Russian officials. What's your reaction to that?
Well, part of why you do investigations is because you don't know certain things. And based upon at least what he's saying at this point, he hasn't found any information in terms of collusion, but that doesn't mean that the investigation has been concluded or that there isn't other information out there that might not be located within the executive branch that might point to that, or there might be other sources that an investigation could yield. A special prosecutor will have some powers in terms of subpoena power, investigatory staffs, in this case through the FBI, that Congress does not have to be able, won't have it the resources. Because the FBI is skilled, especially in doing a variety of types of investigations. And so to make the argument and say that that we don't think a special prosecutor is needed because we haven't found anything, is a little bit disingenuous and a little bit premature. Now, the one thing that I will say that it's important for people to understand is just because a special prosecutor has been appointed, this is not tantamount to guilt. You know, this used to be sort of the rap, or used to be sort of the reputation that once, back when we still had the special prosecutor laws, that once somebody was actually appointed as a special prosecutor, that meant obviously something wrong had happened. No, that doesn't necessarily the case. Special prosecutor is gathering information. We know across Wisconsin, across the country, oftentimes prosecutors work with police, gather information, and then make a decision that, guess what, there's not, in fact, any basis for a criminal indictment. And so I think that's the same here, so that people shouldn't jump up and down on either side, either get upset or cheer and say, this is proof that somebody's been prejudged. No, this is just a good way of making sure that we know what we know, and at a level of government where we want to be sure that our presidents are beyond reproach and that they haven't done anything wrong or any of their staff hasn't done anything wrong, a special prosecutor is useful. And remember, it's also important here that the special prosecutor is not necessarily focused on just Donald Trump. This is all about Michael Flynn. This is all about perhaps, you know, other people. And so it could turn out at the end of the day, this has nothing to do with the President of the United States. And so all that's important to put in context here in terms of understanding that a special prosecutor is really in many ways a special investigator. That might be a better way of describing it.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about this news that a special counsel has been appointed to investigate the Russian involvement in the U.S. presidential election and whether there was any collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. We'll talk some about the scope of the investigation and talk about more reaction and what it means in the overall scheme of things. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
I do it because, Mr. Speaker, there is a belief in this country that no one is above the law, and that includes the President of the United States of America.
That was Democratic U.S. Representative Al Green, who yesterday became the first member of Congress to call for the president's impeachment on the floor of the House of Representatives. We will talk more about that a little bit later in the program with our guest, David Schultz, who's a professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul. And he's also the author of a piece on his blog, which was titled "The Constitution and the Coming Impeachment of Donald Trump." We will get to that in just a moment, but breaking news, late yesterday, the Justice Department named former FBI Director Robert Mueller the special counsel in the investigation to look into Russian involvement or interference in the U.S. presidential election. And we're talking about the significance of this. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org if you have a question or a reaction. Let's go to Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Good morning. Actually, your guest started to touch on what my question was, and that is, what is the actual title of this investigation? What I've seen is that it's pretty much into Russian involvement in our election. And that's a wide, that covers everybody that was involved in the election, everybody from Bernie Sanders to Hillary Clinton to Debbie Wasserman Schultz to the Trump campaign. Does he have the leeway to go in all those directions? Because when you look at it, are they saying Trump advisors, did they assist in hacking the DNC and getting all their emails, or how did that come about?
Yeah, why can you briefly explain what we think we know about why they're looking into possible collusion between Trump campaign officials and the Russians when it came to trying to meddle in the U.S. presidential election?
Well, first off, the investigation seems to at this point have a pretty wide net in terms of getting Mueller, authority and jurisdiction to look at really sort of any aspects regarding, allegations of Russian interference in the U.S. elections or Trump campaign or Trump officials, working with the Russian government during the campaign. And this also includes a variety of different things. I mean, right now it seems mostly, though, focused on, I think, direct collusion, direct interaction between individuals, perhaps such as Michael Flynn. It might look at a few other of the Trump campaign officials, but there's nothing within the jurisdiction of Mueller that won't expand more broadly, potentially, to look at some of the other issues that the caller looked at. But my suspicion is that that this is where the division of labor will start to come in a little bit. We talked about before that Congress may be looking more generally at the issue of Russian involvement in our elections versus I think perhaps the FBI's investigation might be more focused on determining individual involvement of particular people within the United States and whether or not that merits, let's say, perhaps any further criminal prosecution or criminal inquiry. But the caller, again, hits at a good question here. Right now it's a little fuzzy regarding the scope of jurisdiction, but I think for now they're giving Mueller lots of leeway to go wherever he thinks he needs to go.
Oh, let's talk a little bit more about why did the Department of Justice, the Deputy Attorney General, appoint Robert Mueller as special counsel? That this decision didn't have to be made. Why do you think it was made?
I think a couple of reasons. I think one of them is simply for the fact that the political firestorm in the last week surrounding Comey's dismissal by Trump and the reasons for his dismissal, I think put political pressure on the Justice Department to do something like this. And I think that's one of the reasons. I think the second reason is the fact that even though a lot of people want to think that all the government agencies are highly controlled by the president, whether it's president or previous one, or highly political, there are a lot of careerists. There are a lot of people who are in justice departments that transcend particular presidents, and they are committed to doing fair investigations. And so I think a combination of the fact that there are a lot of careerists at the Justice Department worried about the integrity of their organization and in terms of what their mission is in terms of looking at political corruption and criminal behavior, and at the same time, that political pressures that I think were mounting, after Comey's dismissal, I think came together in terms of producing this decision to get the outside counsel or independent investigator.
Yeah, and Comey's dismissal was one thing, but then at least the report that there is a memo that exists that
says
Comey was asked by the president to drop the investigation against his then NSA director Michael Flynn is that just intensified it.
Exactly. And that's the part that starts to raise concerns for many people regarding potential obstruction of justice. And just to let people know here, there's a federal law, Title 18 of the U.S. Code, and there's various sections that refer to it that say that if an individual, I'm roughly paraphrasing it here, corruptly tries to obstruct, influence, or impede an official prosecution or investigation, that would be a federal offense of obstruction of justice. And that becomes the question here, is that Comey's memo from February indicating that the president asked him to lay off on the investigation of Flynn raises perhaps some questions regarding whether or not Comey's eventual dismissal last week was an effort by the president to try to obstruct justice, to try to shut down a possible criminal investigation. And so that's where now I think we have perhaps a third reason going in terms of the appointment of an investigator, is that at least on the surface, there are allegations that perhaps we're looking at presidential obstruction of justice or something else. And so that, I think, becomes important to understand also. And obstruction of justice is a pretty serious offense in terms of when people try to, as it points out here, try to interfere or impede or halt an investigation.
Yeah. More reaction from some other lawmakers. House Minority Leader, Democrat Nancy Pelosi, says while this is a good first step, appointing Robert Mueller as special counsel. And she also, though, thought that an independent investigation or an independent commission is still needed. Apparently, she doesn't want the Department of Justice kind of overseeing this. She wants some independent commission to oversee this.
Well, yes, she does. And right now, I would say there's probably no indication that Robert Mueller won't have the authority to be able to do what he wants to do. Again, somebody who, again, very well respected. I want to take the word of the Justice Department right now that says that we're going to give him a lot of leeway and authority to be able to do an investigation. Now, if it turns out, let us say, let's speculate, if it turns out that at some point that there is clearly interference on the part of the President of the United States, you know, let's say it takes us back to sort of a Nixon firing of an Archibald Cox, that may change the story at that point. But for now, given the fact that there is no provision in the law for creation of an independent prosecutor the way we had, you know, 25, 30, 40 years ago, it's just not sure if an independent commission really will accomplish anything. In fact, an independent commission may actually complicate things in terms of I don't want to quite say too many cooks spoil the broth, but you might have too many people involved at that point, and here you'll have somebody who's skilled as an FBI director coordinating the Justice Department investigation.
In a statement, President Trump said, "As I have stated many times, a thorough investigation will confirm what we already know. There was no collusion between my campaign and any foreign entity. I look forward to this matter concluding quickly. In the meantime, I will never stop fighting for the people and the issues that matter most to the future of the country." So that was a statement apparently released after the announcement that Robert Mueller was appointed special counsel. Which, by the way, I heard on one of the cable shows that the White House only got like a 30-minute heads up that this was happening. It was a real surprise to a lot of people.
Which reinforces the point that I made before is that everybody thinks that, you know, Justice Department, for example, is completely politicized. Again, a lot of what's going on takes place by careerists and by people who are reasonably independent, you know, from presidential removal. And so this doesn't completely surprise me if that story is accurate, that the Justice Department acted independently in terms of how they set up Mueller.
Yeah. While President Trump released, or the White House released that statement yesterday, this is what NPR is reporting, that President Trump is tweeting, apparently, this morning. And he wrote, "This is the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history." Wow. What's your reaction?
Probably not. Yeah, I was going to say first off, trying to figure out if in the course of 45 presidents, if somebody else has been illegitimately hounded, would be a great historical question. But here, there does seem to be enough factual concerns in terms of wanting to do investigations. We have, whether it's through WikiLeaks or other sources, indications that there was Russian interference in U.S. elections. We do have some information regarding the fact that FBI Director Comey was trying to do an investigation of one of Trump's administration officials, was asked to lay off. Comey was dismissed. I mean, we have enough stuff out there at this point to raise questions regarding the possible illegal activity taking place by some officials within the Trump administration or campaign, possibly great questions regarding what was the scope of influence that the Russian government might have had on our elections. And so at some point, this is just an effort to try to get to the bottom of a lot of issues. And in fact, what becomes important to understand here is that some of the problems that Trump is facing are clearly self-inflicted, that his decision to dismiss Comey and then what seemed to be pretty incoherent, significant incoherence or chaos coming out of his administration for several days regarding why he was dismissed and different reasons for it is only creating problems for the Trump administration. The fact that some people would say he hasn't released his tax returns or hasn't divested completely his personal financial holdings or business assets, only raise more questions. And so that for the Trump administration, on one level, the failure to be completely candid, completely forthcoming and transparent on a variety of issues is in part what's hampering the Trump administration's effectiveness in terms of moving its policy agenda. I know that there are a lot of people who will applaud and say that they're happy with what the president has been doing for the last several weeks. But the bottom line reality is that the president has yet to be able to move any of his policy agenda through Congress in a successful fashion. And a lot of the stuff that's happening right now in terms of these controversies that are swirling are impeding his ability and the Republicans' ability to be able to move on things that they were elected to move on.
Yeah, Julie on Facebook says, it's about time, in reference to the appointment of Mueller. I just wish they would get it over with so the U.S. can move on. Not sure exactly what perspective she is coming from in terms of politics, but how long is, do you have any idea on what this is going to mean? Will things move on as this investigation takes place, and how long might this investigation take place?
That's actually a really good question here because, you know, I mean, we just don't know. I mean, it all depends on how broad the scope of this investigation turns out to be. If it were singularly focused on, let us say, for example, Michael Flynn, or singularly focused, let us say, on Donald Trump, it might be relatively quick. When I say relatively quick, it could be anywhere from a few weeks to several months, you know, but if it's now a much more expanded inquiry into something broader about, again, Russian influence in the U.S. elections, this could be something that takes quite a while. And this becomes a problem, I think, for the Trump administration, because so long as the issues and allegations regarding Russian interference in the elections sort of hangs over the administration in terms of it will affect its ability to be able to move beyond that issue. And again, I come back to what I said before, to be able to actually move on its policy agenda. I mean, right now what we're seeing is a president who has to be on a reactive basis almost every day to items going on in the news, and is in a combative situation with not just the media, but in many ways with members of Congress, and thus, again, unable to sort of concentrate and focus on the policy issues that he was elected to pursue.
Gary in Merrill is with us. Hi, Gary.
Yes, good morning. I personally don't care if Donald Trump got money or influenced by Russia. I'm so glad that he's in. I was interested in hearing the conversation. If Hillary would have been elected president, you could have the exact same conversation we're having now. Maybe the politically most corrupt couple that ever was in American politics. As far as influence foreign governments or them influencing us, it hasn't that taken place in our history? Look at Iraq, Libya, Egypt. We had influence there overthrowing those governments. It just goes on and on. Foreign governments are always interested in who becomes American president.
And it's okay with you if the Trump campaign was working with Russian officials on this. That doesn't matter to you, Gary.
I think when you get to that level, influence from foreign governments and business people, the wealthy, I think it's all pretty much corrupt. But
yeah. It's business as usual, I think, is what Gary is saying. And we only have a minute before news, Professor Schultz. What about this from a Trump supporter?
Well, if it's business as usual, that's really not good. And I think most of us would agree that we do not want non-U.S. citizens, we do not want foreign governments influencing the United States' elections, and that it should be the people of the United States that make the calls in terms of who gets elected. And so I think whether it would have been Hillary Clinton elected or whether it would be Donald Trump who's president of the United States, if there are allegations regarding the fact that a foreign country, in this case the Russian Federation, tried to influence our elections, and there were perhaps also allegations of connections between that government and the political campaign, that's worth investigating, because I think as Americans, we want to know that our elections are being determined by us and by not another country.
David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul. He is the author also of a piece on his blog, The Constitution and the Coming Impeachment of Donald Trump. And we will talk about that some more after we check the latest news. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We have been talking with our guest for most of this hour about yesterday's breaking news that a special counsel has been appointed to oversee the Russia investigation. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. David Schultz is our guest, a professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul. But we had originally scheduled Professor Schultz to talk with us about the issue of impeachment, because the talk about impeachment was growing and growing over the past few days after a report surfaced this week that President Trump allegedly asked former FBI Director James Comey to end the investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. There have been growing calls among pundits and some politicians to begin impeachment proceedings. And indeed, Congressman Al Green became the first to call for impeachment on the House floor yesterday. Our guest wrote a blog that was about impeachment, and we will talk with him about that. And we'll wonder if you think it's too early to talk about this, or if you think it's well overdue. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And we will still take some calls on the investigation as well as we go along. But I wanted to start, Professor Schultz, with a clip from CNN. It was the night before last. David Gergen, who served under President Nixon and President Clinton, both of whom faced the impeachment process, was asked about the latest White House controversies. And this is what he said.
I was in the Nixon administration, as you know, and I thought after watching the Clinton impeachment, I thought I'd never see another one. But I think we're in impeachment territory now. Really? For the first time.
He thinks that we're in impeachment territory. Do you think we're in impeachment territory?
Potentially, yes. And first put in context to say that clearly partisan Democrats from almost, you know, January 20th on were calling for impeachment and saying that there's all kinds of reasons to get rid of him. And that was clearly premature, and a lot of that was just sort of, you know, again, partisan sour grapes and so forth. And it really wasn't until the dismissal of Comey that I started to think that we're now entering, you know, again, to use Gergen's phrase, impeachment territory. Because at that point is when you have somebody, you know, who is undertaking an investigation regarding, you know, and, you know, Trump officials or Trump campaign involvement, you know, with Russian officials, and you now have the president saying, you know, as a court, you know, according to what Comey's saying, lay off the investigation, and now Trump is firing that fires that person with, again, some allegations that he did it in effort to obstruct justice. Now we're starting to get into the areas of where we saw both with Nixon and to some extent with Clinton, in terms of to what extent are they trying to impede criminal investigations. And so I think that's really sort of what sort of elevated in terms of saying we might be wanting to have a more serious discussion in terms of impeachment. And part of what my blog does is simply to lay out, try to explain the process of what impeachment is all about, and what are the different grounds that the Constitution provides for in terms of when people could be impeached. And so at the end of the day, do I think we're at a point right now where the president should be impeached? No, but clearly we're starting, again, and to use Gergen's phrase, to start to see that, because we're starting to see parallels to other events in time which were perhaps not as serious. You know, now people are going to call in and complain and say that, what do you mean not as serious? And I say that, well, the initial investigation for Bill Clinton was in terms of whether or not he, as governor of Arkansas, had done anything improper in terms of a deal called Whitewater, kind of like a land investment deal. And I mention that because, you know, if we're now saying that that was enough to call for a special prosecutor versus here where we're now and for eventually to impeachment, where he was impeached for lying about sexual behavior in terms of, under oath. Here we have allegations at a level of perhaps Russian collusion or collusion with the Russian government in the elections last year. That's pretty serious stuff. And so once you start to look at that level, then I think it does put us into the point of saying that that maybe a discussion of impeachment is possible.
James on Facebook says, actually, take that back. Let me share Greg on Facebook, who says, in regards to possible impeachment, with Republicans in charge of the House and Senate and the U.S. Supreme Court and radically gerrymandered voting districts and shiny new voter suppression efforts, I doubt it. A recent article on NPR.org also proclaims it is highly unlikely. There's almost zero chance that Trump would be impeached by a Republican Congress. What about Republicans in charge? Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Right now, I would say it's a very small chance, but I think there's a point where if Trump proves to be a significant political liability for the Republicans going into the 2018 elections, where they seriously worry that he could cost them the House, the Senate, then I think the calculus changes. And the reason why I mention that is that articles of impeachment are laid out, and it says for treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors. And so we have a constitutional standard of the grounds that would constitute impeachment. But what that all really means is I want to quote Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford, people might recall, was president of the United States, but before he was president, he was in the House of Representatives and was moving once on trying to impeach Justice Douglas. And when someone asked him, what are the grounds for impeachment for Justice Douglas, and Gerald Ford said, whatever a majority of the House of Representatives says. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I like that quote is that impeachment is in part a constitutional issue, but in part a political issue. And at some point, if the Republicans do reach a point where, for political reasons, they feel like that Trump becomes a major liability to them, they may move in that direction of saying that they want to remove him because what they want to avoid is what happened in 1974. You know, with Nixon's movement towards impeachment, he resigns, but the class of 74 ushered in an overwhelming majority Democratic House and Senate. So I think there's a political calculus out there that hasn't been reached yet by the Republicans, and it may not be reached. So impeachment is in part a political judgment issue.
Jace in Madison is with us. Hi, Jace.
Hi. I was sort of wanting your guest to weigh in on why we haven't seen any opinion from Mike Pence as this investigation and possible impeachment has arisen. So throughout the whole investigation, we've seen statements from pretty much everybody in the Trump administration who's important, as well as, you know, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. But this whole time, we've kind of seen nothing from Mike Pence. It almost seems to me like they're intentionally trying to keep him as clean as possible. So in the possible situation that Trump does get impeached, he can sort of step in with a clean slate.
Well, we certainly, Mike Pence played a key role in the firing of NSA Director Michael Flynn.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And I was going to say is that there's a couple of different interpretations here. You know, one of them is that Pence is laying low. Why? Because he's absolutely clean in this whole issue, and there's no reason for him to get involved. Another possible scenario we know is that oftentimes vice presidents of the United States are marginalized by their presidents, and they really don't have much involvement in terms of what's going on. That's yet another possibility, too. So I think it's hard to sort of infer anything right now from Trump's, or rather from Pence's silence in terms of whether that means culpability or anything else. It's just, and I know I've seen a lot of sort of blog sphere, a lot of sort of Facebook kind of facts out there where people are saying that, well, obviously Pence has something to hide, the fact he's so quiet or something like that. No, I'm not prepared at this point for us to sort of leap into that territory. Again, I wouldn't be surprised at this point if Pence is just being marginalized by the Trump administration, as many vice presidents are.
Well, Jerry on Facebook says, so let's say Trump takes the fall, that makes Pence president. He says, Jerry, that's a scary thought. And if that's not enough, Ryan will be his vice president. Really? That's not how it works, is it?
No, it's not how it works. Not in this situation. Again, take us back to the Nixon era. Before Nixon resigned as president, Spiro Agnew had to resign as vice president of the United States. So there was a vacancy with the vice presidency, of which Nixon then picked Gerald Ford to be his vice president. Nixon resigns. Then at that point, Ford becomes president. There's a vacancy in the vice presidency, and Gerald Ford had freedom to pick his vice president, whom he picked as Nelson Rockefeller, who was governor of the state of New York.
Yeah.
So let us say under the scenario, Trump were to resign, resign or impeached, and that Pence becomes president of the United States, he would have authority to be able to designate whomever he wants to be his vice president of the United States.
I suppose he could pick Ryan, but
he could. He could decide to do that if he wants, but he could pick somebody else if he wished to do so.
We have less than a minute, but I do want to get Regina in Denmark on. Hi, Regina.
Hi, good morning. You know, I love this conversation. The thing that occurs to me is that how does Trump recover after 110, 120 days of nothing but this kind of chatter? How does his presidency recover from this? And then a second thought that occurred to me while I was listening to you is, why don't we have a provision for a recall?
Interesting, but I don't know if we'll get the time for both. But can this presidency recover, Professor Schultz, after just 120 days?
Well, that's the first point right there. It's only a first 120 days. We still have over 3.5 years to go, so it is possible. But clearly the caller is right in the sense that the tone that's been set by the first 120 or so days does not suggest a president that is willing to learn from past mistakes. And so the imprint may already be there, but it is possible to make changes. The reason why we don't have recall is recall because we don't directly elect president of the United States. Remember, it's through the Electoral College. And so we would have to do a pretty significant change in the way we do our Constitution and selection of president to do a recall process.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to resign?
I don't think so. I don't think so. At least not right now. Now, if the investigation were to turn up something far more serious or damaging, maybe yes. But right now, I just don't see that.
Yeah. Well, we will talk again. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Joy.
David Schultz, a professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul. Thank you to Chris Molina and to Nyasia Ellison and to Brianne Chasseau for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We'll be right back.